joined. Has joined.
Good evening. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
So we will start with a L'shem Yehud. And our class today is a basic class number 15. You can find that handout on the Revealed Wisdom Matrix in row 15 in the left-hand column. When that landing page opens up, scroll to the last link on the page, and it's the handout for class 15. The title of this discussion is Relativity, and it's explaining that truth is relative. This is something that is very hard for people to accept. Because after all, Hashem's name is truth, but Hashem doesn't change. So how can it be relative? But we will come to understand this teaching during today's class, I hope. L'shem Yehud Kudsha Baruch Hu Ishkinte Bidhilu Urchinu Udhilu Udhilu Urchinu. Liakta l'shem yudhei bavavhe, the Yehuda shalim b'shem kol Yisrael, limud Torah mitzvah, la'asok Torah mitzvah, vayehino amadunai Eloheinu aleinu ma'asei yadeinu konenei aleinu ma'asei yadeinu konenehu. Basic class 15. The truth about the theory of relativity. Do you know the meaning of and the difference between something that is absolute and something relative? That is what this class is about. This is what this class is teaching. This concept is necessary to understand, or at least hear about, in order to learn the tool of mind over matter. This is a subject that can be difficult to absorb, yet I am here to assist you in your spiritual growth and to help you with this concept. How many of you know or have heard about the theory of relativity by Albert Einstein? Since you're muted, I won't expect you to answer, but I hope you will have heard of it. That's right, if you've lived in the 20th century, you should have heard about the theory of relativity. Tonight, we are going to learn about the theory, I mean the truth, that taught Einstein his two theories. Yes, Einstein had two theories. One is called the specific theory, revealed by him in 1905. And the other is called the general theory, revealed by him in 1915. There's only one more question I will ask about Einstein and his theories. What is the relationship between Albert Einstein and Rabbi Yehuda Ashlag? They are both Jewish. As a Kabbalist, Rabbi Ashlag must reveal his light and his knowledge of Kabbalah prior to any secular revelation of science. Remember, never believe anything I say, but test it and experience it for yourself. Since Rabbi Ashlag revealed his facts of relativity prior to Einstein's theory, they must come from the same root of the same part of Adam, being the first man. And as an aside, this can be proven because Albert starts with an aleph, and Rabbi Yehuda Ashlag his last name, his family name, starts with an olive. And Einstein would start with an olive as well. These are signs and indications of relationships between souls in different generations, or in the same generation. What is their root? Does anyone want me to prove that something must be revealed by a Kabbalist before it becomes available to the general public? Well, I'm not going to prove that to you. You will just have to do that research for yourself. I have, and it is up to you to experience it for yourself. If you study history, all major technological improvements in the world were revealed by a Kabbalist in their writings prior to that item being revealed in the secular world. Rabbi Ashlag said in 1903, everything is relative. Science has not said that yet. They're still looking for absolutes. And many of my students, when they've come to study Kabbalah, are looking for absolutes. But there are no absolutes, as we will come to discuss and understand. Actually, what Rabbi Ashlag said was each Sephirah in the Tree of Life receives from the Sephirah above it and shares with the Tree of Life below it, the Sephirah below it. It does two things at once. In spirituality,
Hello? This
is impossible.
Has joined.
Since the consciousness defines the idea in spirituality, therefore all things must be relative to each other. The lower Sephirah is a receiver relative to the higher Sephirah, and the higher Sephirah is a sharer with respect to the lower Sephirah. Is this aspect clear? Do you understand this concept? In spirituality, you cannot be doing two things at once. Hashem can do two things at once. Mankind cannot, as much as the female of the species tell us that they multitask. And I will tell you that I multitask. But the reality is, we're only thinking one thought at a time. We're only doing one action at a time. And on the spiritual, we cannot do two things at once. While in our physical world, there is an ability to multitask. But it is not true multitasking. Now, normally, most teachers of Kabbalah would show you the Tree of Life glyph at this point, and it would ask you to look at the tree and which Sephirah is above and which is below. But Rabbi Ashlag teaches us that these pictures, these diagrams, confuse and limit us, since we need to understand the Tree of Life in 10 dimensions, not in 2 dimensions, as the drawing demonstrates. Let me expand on this concept. The Tree of Life is infinite. Each tree of life has another tree of life within it. There is Tiferet within Chesed, within Givurah, within Yesod, within Keter, within Malchut, within Netzach, etc., etc., etc. And so on, and so on, and so on. Let us look at the top tree at the Sephirah of Chesed. It is right column, so it is considered sharing. Before I go on, I am going to take an aside and discuss the Tree of Life briefly. Rabbi Ashlag teaches us to teach Kabbalah, but without using pictures or diagrams. He tells us that when we see the Tree of Life glyph, it causes confusion, since the glyph is a metaphor and people see it as real. The glyph is two-dimensional, while the tree is multidimensional and actually is infinite in each dimension and also has infinite dimensions. Looking at the glyph is both limiting, and also many people find it illuminating until they delve into the deeper aspects of Kabbalah. They then find it limiting to their growth. I choose not to use the picture or the glyph in my classes, but you may find it useful at this time. My suggestion is to try and understand this material without using the glyph. And then, if necessary, use the glyph as you listen to the recording. The Chesed Sephirah is the top of the physical world, Sephirot. The top right column. It is directly below Chachma and directly opposite Givurah. It communicates lines that connect to it on the glyph with Chachma, with Bina, with Netzach, with Tiferet, and with Givurah. These lines communicate in two directions. In our world, they communicate in two directions also. Now, there is another level of communication which is not drawn on the glyph, and that is every chesed is in communication with every other chesed everywhere on the tree of life, in all of the dimensions. That means the tree within the tree and also the trees within the other sephirot on its tree. Now let's turn to the question, is chesed always sharing? In every aspect of every place and within every sephirot on every tree, is chesed always sharing? Is this always true of the sephirah? Is it always sharing or is it also receiving? Is it a male sephirah or a female sephirah? In spirituality, something is equal to another or different from another. Sharing and receiving are opposite things. Male is opposite female. They are not similar to, nor are they equal at all. In fact, they are two different levels of consciousness. In spirituality, there is only consciousness, since there is no materiality or physicality. In spirituality, can something be both receiving and sharing? Then how can Chesed receive from Givurah, since it shares with Givurah? Let us now look at modern science. Let us now look at modern science and its theory of uncertainty. As I understand it, the current theory of uncertainty says that one cannot measure both the speed and the location of an atom, or a component of atoms. Now let's look at the science question. In a forest, there is no human being. Does the tree fall in the forest if there is no one able to hear it fall, or to see it after it falls? The Midrash gives an answer to this question when it says that the first 5 days of creation was all ready, but nothing happened. There was no rain, there were no plants growing from the earth, until man was there to experience the rain and to see the growing things. Science says that you can only calculate the probability of the tree falling, but it cannot be certain that it falls without man hearing it. This is not true, of course. There is only certainty. Either the tree is falling or the tree is growing. The fact that I do not know which it is doing does not change the certainty. This is because there is something in the universe that does know the truth, and there is communication between that entity and the other levels of consciousness within the level of that Sephirot. Let us say that Tiferet of that particular tree knows it is growing. Then each Tiferet in the universe knows that this tree is growing. The fact that I cannot access that particular fact within my Tiferet does not change the truth that it is growing. Now let us return to the question, is the Sephirot Chesed of a particular frame of reference called that tree that we are talking about above always sharing, or does it sometimes receive?
Hello?
Yes?
I saw a program about trees, and sometimes a tree receives and sometimes a tree shares, and it's connected to an interconnected web that grows along the surface of the earth, that all trees are connected. And so they know when a tree is sick or when a tree has been cut, and they actually send extra nutrients to that fallen tree or sick tree to help it out. So sometimes it's sharing and sometimes it is giving.
That is what science teaches. Is it what Kabbalah teaches? Can there be a difference in the teachings between Kabbalah and science?
I think Kabbalah knows first, and then science catches up.
But you didn't answer my question.
Okay. Ask me again, and I'll answer you.
How about if we wait till the end of the class, and I ask it again?
Okay, that sounds good.
I'm continuing to read. It is clear that the Sephirot in this world are relative. The Ari teaches that this is one of the problems with the world prior to the world of Tikkun. The concept of absolute leaves no room for anything but perfection, and it also limits communication to only one direction, downwards. The result was the breaking of the vessels, which will be discussed in other classes. Is there a consciousness, a Sephirah, that is wholly absolute and not always relative? What about Keter? Is not Keter always sharing with Hochma or Bina? No, it receives from the tree of life that exists prior to it. Remember the Malchut of the Malchut, or the another frame of another vocabulary, the seed that is in the fruit from one tree grows into a new tree, the next generation. So the Keter has to receive from the Malchut of the previous generation. Let me continue to read. The Malchut of the prior tree becomes the Keter of the tree in the next generation, which is right next to it. And that's actually hinting to the answer in the discussion that Brandy and I will have at the end of the class. This is one reason that the Kabbalist named it Keter, or crown. Since a human who wears a crown does not change in essence when they take the crown off of their heads, it is both connected to the person and separate from the person. Now, is there an entity that is not connected to another entity? Of course, everything is connected since everything has tree of life within it. This is because creation is a process that follows the tree of life. And this will be made clear when we learn the four phases of creation as our first advanced class. One more question. Is a pipe a vessel Kabbalistically? A pipe flows in one direction. There are atoms of the flow that go in only one direction. And there are atoms in the pipe that are bouncing off the wall of the pipe that, based on the angle, might flow backwards. But the force of the atoms behind keeps it moving forward. The answer to this question relies on the idea of the Malchut of the manifestation. A pipe does not have a Malchut since it never rests until it is shut off, and then it becomes a vessel, not a pipe or a channel. Now, when someone channels from another entity information, is that channel pipe connected to the other trees in the universe? The answer is no. That is one of the reasons that it is a negative thing. No matter how positive the channel says it is, or how much white light or angels or beauty they say they see, remember, I am not here to prove anything to you. I am here to give you information on how to remove chaos. Anytime you are listening to a channel, you are interacting in a negative way. And that, according to the boomerang law, that negative action will return to your life as negativity, which is another word for chaos. Now we can expand on the question, why is the world created so that the Jewish world must reveal first prior to the other nations receiving this information? The basic reason has to do with what took place at Mount Sinai. The giving of the Torah also included an additional desire to receive, or additional consciousness, in other words. The purpose of this additional desire to receive is so that the Jew will strive to bring down the light, to bring down from the upper worlds the energy. Then it is the responsibility of the Jew to share this energy with the other 70 plus nations. This is the purpose of the Jewish nation. This is the tikkun of the Jewish nation. Prior to Abraham, there were three opportunities for mankind to bring this energy down for each individual, and for each family, and for each nation. These opportunities are the first 10 generations up to the flood, then the next 10 generations until the birth of Abraham and the Tower of Babel experience. These were opportunities for the other nations to receive and act upon this larger desire to receive this consciousness. Then the Jewish nation, through its forefathers and its development in Egypt, received this additional soul, this additional desire to receive at Mount Sinai. Now let us ask the question, in the Tree of Life, is there time? Did you ask the question, which Tree of Life am I looking at? Probably not. Since you are not thinking about the consciousness of Satan, since you are not yet thinking without the consciousness of Satan and our selfishness. One student, when I asked this question about time, asked if time depended on the beginning. So let us look at the Torah and what it says about beginning. You all know that the Torah says about beginning, it says Bereshit. The Masoretic text says, be not Bereshit. It says Bereshit. If the vowels were a patach and pronounced ah with the bet, in Hebrew that would mean that there was an implied hey also. The word would then be Behareshit. The hey in Hebrew as a prefix makes it a definite article. Now the word would then be correctly translated as in the beginning. Without the hey, it becomes in a beginning. There are no vowels in the Torah. Therefore, both ways to pronounce the word are correct. What is the difference between in a beginning and in the beginning? And how does this change the idea of time? In the beginning implies only one beginning. In a beginning implies multiple beginnings or multiple creations. And this is where the idea of the 974 generations prior to Adam comes from. Each generation has a beginning, so there are multiple beginnings. In fact, Kabbalah says in each instant, there is a new beginning. Hashem is constantly recreating the world. Time then must be relative, since it depends on the beginning. Now, must there be continuity between each creation? This second, there is a new world. Are your memories the same between these two worlds? Does Hashem create our memories intact in each new instance creation? Relative to us, the answer is of course. Relative to Hashem, the answer is not necessarily. And this is one of the potential pitfalls when someone speaks to you of the Akashic records that they have accessed with their psychic abilities. To which creation's memories are they connecting? Returning to our question, actually, before I go on, I just want to make a comment. We all have become aware of the Torah codes. And there are many questions that are asked of the Torah and asked, find me the code so I will have an answer to the question I've asked. For example, when will the Mashiach come? It's a question we all ask, but don't know not to ask. Because the sages have told us, don't ask. Some modern Kabbalists are saying, it's okay to ask now, because we're so very close. Whereas when we were far away, we shouldn't ask because it would give us a negative feeling. It would cause us to stop yearning for the Mashiach since it's so far away. But now that it's close, we should know so that we can truly yearn. Are you seeing the relative terms, the relative issues involved in this discussion? The Torah has all possibilities within it. What does that mean? The Torah codes were discovered by asking about various sages' names, family names, first names, code names like the Ramban or the Rambam, and so forth. And all of this information is encoded in the codes. But is there another generation? Is there another world? Is there another creation where one of these sages has a different name? But the material that that sage revealed are the same in both worlds? That's what you need to contemplate and answer for yourself. I'm continuing to read. Returning to our question, is time relative? Time is relative when we speak about ourselves. Time is not relative when we speak of time from the point of view of the Creator. One modern Kabbalah teaches that time runs forward in our world while it is running backwards relative to our world in the world of Zeranpin, the Yetzirah. Our future is their past. This is the source of angels and other Yetzirotic entities telling people in our world, using psychic abilities, the future. They are just looking up their news reports. There is a limit to this, since the spiritual law they follow limits their telling someone in our frame of existence that the future more than 30 days ahead. Their newspapers go back centuries, but they don't have permission to reveal it to us. Since we have now discussed that time is relative from our perspective, we can reveal to you what is time. Time is mercy. It is the distance between cause and effect. The purpose of this definition of time in our understanding is to utilize this space or this distance between cause and effect to do teshuvah, to return to God and change the action. In a world of perfect judgment, if I were to steal chas v'shalom, my hand would immediately drop off, chas v'shalom. If I were to commit adultery, something else would drop off. Since Hashem is merciful, He created teshuvah as the opportunity to correct all of our mistakes, and in effect make that a more powerful effect relative to the worlds than if we do not make a mistake in the first place. Of course, this world of perfect judgment has no free will. Since if you see your brother's hand fall off, you tend to make sure yours does not fall off. The Kabbalah teacher that I mentioned above explains the Mashiach consciousness means that time in the world of Yetzirah and Asiyah, our world and the spiritual world, what we call the unity of the spiritual and the physical must be chaotic, since the time sequence in both worlds must start to run in only one direction together, not both directions separately. Why is it important to know that everything is relative and there is only the Creator that has absolute truth, absolute certainty, and absolute wisdom? The language of branches. The spiritual world above us is the root of the things in this world. The Kabbalists use everyday words to describe the roots above us. That means they may say dish, or human being, or wisdom, or blade of grass. We must always interpret their words not as the physical thing, but as which relative thing they are talking about. This is one of the most important aspects of the Kabbalah. Which frame of reference is being described? Which tree of life is being discussed? Is the frame of reference in the physical world the spiritual world called Yetzirah, or is the spiritual world of Bria, or the spiritual world of Atzilut? Since everything is relative, does everything have to die? The answer is no. Does everything that dies need to deteriorate? Do we need to rot in the ground or the mausoleum? No. A righteous person, when he is buried, does not rot. Dig his body up and he will be warm to the touch. He will have no fluid loss and he will look like he was just buried. We have examples of people buried 400 or more years. When their bodies are dug up, look like that. Even in America, one example is after 28 years, the body of Medgar Evers was dug up and found to be like that the day he died, except one part of his left wrist and hand had deteriorated. Why is it important to me to know that everything is relative? Why am I giving this class in the basic level of classes? It is important for you to know that your tikkun is relative to yourself. It is relative to what you are willing to do. It is relative to what you are capable of doing. And it is relative to what you have the potential to do. Without knowing what you did in your last lifetime, which is relative to this lifetime, you will never accomplish your tikkun. And this is what is taught by the Ari, that we must know what mistakes we made in our last lifetime in order to correct for this lifetime. Was this true for all generations? Probably not. Since the Zohar says that approximately half of the Jewish nation achieved their tikkun prior to Rabbi Shimon's generation. Yet if we discuss history, what happened after the generation of Rabbi Shimon? Time slowed down and became the Middle Ages of darkness. Less change in the world means less tikkun achieved. The Ari came and taught things that are looked upon as truth and absolute by the religious community. Yet these things must be learned and viewed through the lens of relativity. We are what we think we are. Think is relative to our thoughts. This is a true statement. Yet we are conditioned to think certain thoughts are good and certain thoughts are not. This is the Judeo-Christian morality. Is it true? Is that truth absolute? I am going to live 300 plus years. I am presently 72 years old, 73 years old, with a life expectancy, according to science, of about 22 more years. I suffer from pain and debilitation and bad eating habits, etc. All according to science. Do I know this as truth? Or can I change the way I think? Can I change the way the world views things? How do I do that? That is mind over matter. And that will be discussed next week. Yet it starts with the way I think and how the society that I choose to live within impacts my thoughts. And it does impact my thoughts. Relativity is knowledge that allows you to start to change your thinking. If I add on to a thought which is absolute, the idea that it is not absolute but relative, I begin to change my thinking. I begin to get different thoughts. I can even start to ask, how does an airplane fly? And expect an answer other than science, other than the physical answer. A plane flies due to the desire to receive of the people on that plane. Do not ever fly with anyone suicidal. How do you know? That is what intuition is for. But my intuition does not seem to work. Let us discuss why. Intuition. What is intuition? It is that still small voice within each one of us. Some are able to hear this voice, and others are not. Sometimes what is heard is a lie. Sometimes it is accurate. What is intuition? Intuition is your connection to your higher self. If this connection is solid, your intuition is telling you solid information. If the connection is weak, your intuition is giving you weak information. Yet all of the intuition information is always correct. It is only relative to ourselves and our actions that day or that week or that month that defines what and how we receive the information. You want your intuition to always work? Then you follow all of the recommendations in the Torah all of the time. The more impure your actions, the less your intuition will work for you. If you are brutally honest with yourself, then you can test this and experience the truth of what I have just said. Most people are not capable of being spiritually and brutally honest. Most spiritual people will tell you that they are sharing, that they think about other people. The Kabbalists will tell you that they do not truly care about the other people, but they want to be close to the Creator. And to receive that closeness, they must share. Which is the truth and which is the falsehood? Remember, everything is relative. And the purpose of knowing this relative principle is to really and truly learn cause and effect. A conclusion.
Has joined.
Let us draw this class to a close by understanding relativity as the tool that it is. Let us look at a fish tank with one fish in it. The sides of the tank are not clear glass. They are colored different colors. There are four people looking at the fish from the four sides. One says the fish is red because he's looking through red colored glass. One says the fish is green
because he's looking through green-colored glass. One says the fish is blue because he's looking through blue-colored glass. And one says the fish is yellow because he's looking through yellow-colored glass. Which of the four people is correct? None of them, since the fish is silver. I can see this by climbing to the top of the tank and seeing it without any colored glass. Each person seeing through a glass has a truth that is relative to him. His truth is valid to him. If I am the person seeing the fish is red, will I go to war with the person who sees the fish is green? Why would I do that? It is only the color of a fish. So now replace people with countries and the fish with the natural resources my country needs to survive in this technological world that has developed. Would I go to war with the other three people, the other three countries, so I get the resources and they do not? Why does this happen? Because the propaganda machines of each country persuade people that they are right and the other country is wrong? Let us put modern voices to this statement. The Muslim suicide bomber is wrong and crazy. I am right because women should not have to wear long clothes and face coverings if they do not want to. Also, girls should have a right to an education and to be able to drive. Will you go to war over these issues? Is that not why the war in Iraq and Afghanistan happened? What is wrong with the worldview that says I am right and the other guy is wrong? Being right creates separation. Being unified means having a desire to be unified, no matter if he is wrong. I can be wrong with him. And that makes us both right, correct? What will create peace in the world? Everyone thinking like me? Or my knowing that their thinking is relative to them, and my thinking is relative to me, and they are both right. We are both right. And I cannot kill him unless he tries to kill me first. Is this a form of peace relative to the way the world is today? The purpose of teaching this tool of relativity is to start you in changing your worldview. Not to my worldview, but to your worldview, which includes the diversity of the creation. How will you use relativity in your life? How will you integrate this into your life? How will you change your worldview? Do you want to change your worldview? Or does your current worldview serve you well? How does your current worldview support the chaos in your life? And now the class is over, so it is time for Randy and I to have our discussion about what science teaches. And what science is teaching is that a particular species of tree has communication through their roots, or through something that science doesn't understand, so that when the tree is harmed, is not well, that the other trees are sending it resources to get well. But all of that discussion that science is teaching is discussing and teaching about physical causes. And there are no physical causes. There's only physical effects. The spiritual is the cause. Yes, science can measure the resources are going to the harmed tree. But that doesn't come from the communication within the trees on the physical level. It comes from the communication of the trees in the spiritual level. And the physics of the spiritual level is not the same as the physics of our world. I hope this helps you to clarify your opinion, Brandy.
It helps.
Is there something wrong with science? No. Science is a subset of Torah. There will come a time when science will measure those spiritual levels. But until science measures the spirituality, their conclusions will always be suspect. It's a fact that all of the nuclear physicists, from Einstein to, I don't remember the name of the man who created the uncertainty principle, but all of these nuclear scientists that built the atomic and then the hydrogen bomb, as they aged, they all retired and stopped dealing with these perceptions because they came to know the truth that everything is relative. And there is nothing absolute except for Hashem. And that's what they all learn to accept. And that's when they stop trying to develop their scientific principles and theories. There was only one man who, until the day he died, refused to accept that. You all know of him. He was a man, I forget his name, I'm sure one of you will remember it and remind me. But he was a man who lived with ALS, Lou Gehrig disease. He was a man who continually grew in his scientific knowledge and theories. He never accepted that there was a spiritual truth called God. Why didn't he accept it? Why didn't he grow to the same conclusions as all of these other scientific geniuses? It has to do with the source of his soul. Does anyone have any questions? Am I telling you not to listen to science?
No.
Good. No, I am not telling you that. I'm telling you to understand that science is also relative to where it has developed historically and where it will continue to develop. And our understanding of the Torah will also relatively grow. The next generation will know more about science, and it will know more about Torah than we do today.
I'd like to make a comment.
Please, go ahead.
Okay. I think at Tu B'Shvat, we've learned that the trees are, judged by human behavior. And we just saw a lot of evidence. You know, with the hurricane, the tree damage is terrible. And that's something that science hasn't come around to believing or expressing. Let me put it that way.
I hope you don't believe it either, but that you know it to be true.
Mm-hmm. Well, but that's what we've learned. And I've seen it in an ice storm about 10 years ago, and then I saw it again with these last two hurricanes. Only it was really bad this time.
And the prophecy is the book of the prophets.
That's a good example. Isn't that an example of relativity?
Yes, it is. Absolutely. And the book of prophecy is filled with prophecies that tell us it's going to be coming worse as well. From 10 years ago to the 10 years from now, it will be more severe. Until people will have no choice but to see the truth. The truth of relativity.
So Hanok was your scientist, Stephen Hawking?
That came to my mind. That I didn't know he wasn't, he didn't believe in God.
Yeah, he is passed. Mm-hmm. Yes, Brandy, that is the scientist I was referring to.
Okay.
I didn't get to listen to the whole thing because I got a call from the hospital saying they were moving Tony from ICU to a room, that he's better.
Well, Hashem.
So I have to leave and get dressed to go. But thank you. I'll try to catch the last part again because I got a lot this time. It was a little bit more understanding for me. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, and give Tony our best wishes, and that we're very happy that he's improving.
And we thank y'all for the prayers. I know that's what carried him through, and that Psalm 91 was just right on time.
And
if I could just tell you this, because I probably won't be able to make the Deeper Zohar, but you know, when we left off Thursday, we were on number 99 because it was my birth year. And when I went to the Bible wheel, you started off naming some of the words that went with 99. And do you know the name of Hannah was in it? So that was really an eye-opener with numbers relating to your birth year. So you might mention it in class today if I'm sure I can't be there today.
Understood.
Okay, thank you, Hano. Appreciate you very much.
You'll be well, Hannah. Does anybody else have any questions? I bid you all shalom. Have a beautiful afternoon.
Shalom.
Shalom.
Shalom. Thank you.